Good morning and welcome to HealthWorks. This is Carol Knier, Community Health Manager at Wayne Memorial Hospital. Thank you for joining me today. So on today's show, I have a returning guest. I have Dr. Bradley Sarwar. Good morning, Dr. Sarwar. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so happy for you to be on the show. I think the information that you provide is wonderful. And for those of you that may be listening for the first time or returning, thank you. But Dr. Sarwar works at Wayne Memorial Physician Specialty Clinic, and he is an interventional cardiologist, correct?
Correct, yes.
And how long have you been here?
I've been here almost 3 years now.
Wow. That's great. And you work within the Heart and Vascular Center, which we will talk about later on. But I think the topic that's really important for this month is atrial fibrillation, right?
Absolutely. You know, and I appreciate the opportunity to get to speak to you all about this topic, because this is a big deal. This is something that's very common. Atrial fibrillation is an abnormal heart rhythm that is the most common, the most prevalent heart rhythm that we see in the United States. A little over 2 million individuals are affected annually with this rhythm. AFib is more of a pain in the neck than anything else. But what happens, the heart normally is very regular. The top part of the heart beats, then the bottom part. So top, bottom, in a nice smooth system. But with atrial fibrillation, the top part of the heart goes haywire and it starts to quiver. And all these erratic, irregular electrical signals get sent down to the bottom part of the heart, so the heart beats faster and more irregular than it should. So many times people will just be sitting there minding their own business, not doing anything wrong, and all of a sudden immediately start feeling their heart racing, start feeling flutters in their chest that don't go away. Sometimes they get dizzy, lightheaded, some people pass out. Some people don't feel a thing.
That's the scary part.
I wish we understood a little bit more about why some people are very symptomatic while others feel nothing. Mm-hmm. But in addition to just having this hard, fast, irregular rhythm, atrial fibrillation does a lot of things if left untreated. It can be very harmful. It increases the risks of developing a stroke. Mm-hmm. So when the top part of the heart stops beating effectively, it just starts quivering. And when the heart quivers, it sort of churns the blood. And there's a couple of particular locations in the heart, particularly in the left atrium, where clots can form. And when that occurs, those clots can break free and those clots travel. If they travel to the brain, they can cause a stroke. Mm-hmm. So we don't like to see atrial fibrillation. So, you know, a lot of people come in, there's a lot of things that we have to discuss, but one is, what do you do about the rhythm itself?
Right.
What do you do about the risk of a stroke? And mm-hmm. What do you do long term? So the first thing is, just so you're aware, take a step back. We'll come to all that in a little bit. But the first thing we need to talk about is, who develops atrial fibrillation? And the answer is, anyone can develop it, but the prevalence increases with age. I can tell you that I have seen people in their 20s with it. It's fairly uncommon and usually more associated with either a really bad illness like a bad pneumonia or with substance abuse. So any kind of stimulant, whether that's a lot of caffeine, whether it's a cough and cold season and they take decongestants that have pseudoephedrine in it, that can lead to atrial fibrillation, as well as obviously a lot of drugs like cocaine and methamphetamines. Those can stimulate the heart in bad ways and promote AFib. But as we get older, the incidence increases, the prevalence increases. And so by the time people hit 65, they have almost a 1 in 5 chance of developing atrial fibrillation. So there are risk factors that we can screen for. The most common reason for atrial fibrillation is what I like to refer to as the silent killer, and that's obstructive sleep apnea. It's very common. People that snore should be screened for sleep apnea, because if this is left untreated, then it can develop into things like atrial fibrillation and high blood pressure in the lungs called pulmonary hypertension. But there are a lot of other risk factors. People that have issues with their thyroid, if they have too much thyroid hormone, can develop atrial fibrillation. People that have underlying lung disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or even an acute bronchitis or pneumonia, lung disease is very strongly linked with atrial fibrillation.
That's really interesting. I never knew that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talking about lung diseases like COVID, right? Past COVID.
Yep.
That is a condition that affected many people's lungs, correct?
It has. And we still don't know some of the long-term effects that COVID has had. So we have seen a lot of people that that have developed AFib, and whether or not it's related to COVID or not, it's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I can say we have seen an increasing number over the past several years. There are some racial predilections. Those that are Caucasian tend to have a higher incidence of AFib than those that are African American. Those that are smokers tend to have a higher incidence, predominantly from the underlying lung disease, we suspect.
Okay.
But whether or not nicotine has a direct effect on AFib is a possibility. And then we start to see that people that have ischemic heart disease, that have blocked arteries or have had heart attacks in the past, are also at an increased risk. Further causes, if you have underlying valvular heart disease, so if you have mitral valve disease or aortic valve disease, those also increase the likelihood of developing AFib. So the valves in the heart can, if they leak or if they're narrowed, can cause the top part of the heart to enlarge, predominantly the left atrium, and as that starts to stretch and dilate, then the electrical signals that are normally nice and organized go haywire,
mm-hmm.
and can lead to increased AFib. Likelihood of AFib.
So, you know, one, you talked about many causes, many reasons, you know, but first of all, regular healthy visits each year with their primary care doctor is so important, correct?
It is. AFib is fairly easy to identify. The first thing that patients do note is the irregular fast heartbeat, but not everyone feels that. So just because, you know, you don't feel that doesn't mean that you don't have atrial fibrillation. Some people come in and their heart rates have been going 130 to 160 beats a minute for an unknown amount of time.
Mm.
And the only reason why they come in for an evaluation is that they're a little short of breath.
Right.
And they don't feel anything, but when you come in, the first thing you do is you evaluate the patient, you check their vital signs, what's their heart rate, what's their blood pressure, and the heart rate is fast and it's irregular. And if someone's sitting at rest, their heart rate shouldn't be 160 beats a minute. If they're exercising, it might get that high.
right.
But not at rest. So that's the first giveaway. And then, you know, a careful examination can reveal an irregular heartbeat, and then an EKG can confirm the presence of atrial fibrillation.
Right. And so if they, you know, go through their primary care doctor and they feel those concerns, the next step may be to send them over to somebody like you,
yep.
correct?
Absolutely. The first thing that we want to do in someone with AFib is determine what's the best route of therapy. So we have a lot of options in medicine, and studies have looked at the best ways, and it's clear as mud as far as the best course. So really what we have to do is individualize it, mm-hmm. the therapies. Some people, we can control their heart rates very easily with some typical blood pressure medications, medication called metoprolol or diltiazem. They are both very good at slowing down the heart rate. Studies of tens of thousands of patients have shown that the course of action that you take with a patient doesn't matter. As long as you can control the heart rates, people do just as well as if you do more advanced therapies.
Okay.
So really what it comes down to for us is symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone has minimal symptoms, first thing we want to do is put them on a medicine to slow their heart rate down. The second thing is to evaluate what is their risk for developing a stroke. And we have several different scoring methodologies to determine what is that individual's risk. If you're young and don't have any underlying structural heart disease, if you don't have diabetes, and if you haven't had a stroke, then your risk of developing a stroke is on the lower side. And you may not need a blood thinner. But if you're over the age of 65, if you've had diabetes or prior strokes or congestive heart failure or high blood pressure, then the risk increases dramatically. So we determine what the individual risk is, and if it's considered high, then we would talk about starting a blood thinner. The old days, we only had one blood thinner, and that was Coumadin or Warfarin. That was the best we had, and so we used it.
Right.
And it was very good. The problem with that medication is that it has to be monitored very regularly, and we tell you to eat healthy, we tell you to eat salads, And those green leafy vegetables have a lot of vitamin K that counteracts the coumadin and makes managing that very, very difficult. So I guess about 15 years ago, some of the first new oral medications came out that didn't need all the monitoring and didn't need the same sort of dietary restrictions that make managing AFib a lot simpler. So medications, there's several on the market now that are very good, that don't have to be monitored. It can be taken once or twice a day. They lower the risk of having a stroke substantially. Mm-hmm. Now, anytime you're on a blood thinner, just like the name implies, it increases your risk of bleeding.
Right.
And so, you know, we always have to weigh that risk very carefully with the patient on an individual basis.
Right.
So once we've decided, you know, anticoagulation or not, then the next step is, do we just put you on a medication to slow things down, or do we up the ante? Do we try to get patients out of AFib and keep them out of AFib? Sometimes patients come in and we actually do what's called a cardioversion, a procedure where we sedate them and then we basically hard reset the heart. We shock the heart, and a lot of times that will get people out of AFib. Unfortunately, if someone's coming into the hospital, let's say they have a pneumonia or bad bronchitis, or they're in congestive heart failure, you can shock them out of AFib, but they're going to go right back into it. So we tend to rate control those patients first and then consider cardioversion at a later date. But if someone has minimal, doesn't have underlying lung disease, doesn't have an acute exacerbation of their COPD or a pneumonia, then sometimes we will consider cardioverting them. If they stay out of AFib, then we just continue the lower dose metoprolol or diltiazem, and people do very well with that.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't, if they keep going back into it, then we have to consider the next step, and that's a group of medications called antiarrhythmics. Antiarrhythmic medications are fairly potent, and a lot of them have a lot of side effects. Matter of fact, some of them have to actually be started in the hospital for 3 days to make sure that they tolerate them.
Wow.
So it's not an easy decision.
Right.
And I wish I could say that they're very effective, but we see them work about 60% of the time.
Okay.
Which means 40% of the time, they don't work.
Right.
So if those medications fail, then the next option is the procedural route. So we can go in, the cardiology community, no, we don't do them here at Wayne, but we can go in and we can do what's called an electrophysiology study with an ablation. And we can find where some of the AFib is coming from, zap that portion of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it comes from the lungs, as I mentioned earlier. And so they actually take a catheter into the pulmonary veins that are the conduit that brings blood from the lungs back to the heart. And they can do electrical burns around those veins, causing some scar that then acts as an insulator to block the electrical signals from the lungs, stopping AFib.
Wow.
And those are actually fairly effective. We see people, the electrophysiologists mm-hmm. that do them, have, you know, upwards of 85-90% success rates long term. But that's a fairly invasive procedure that a lot of people just aren't interested in if they can control it safely with the medication.
Right, right, which is, again, a great option for individuals. But, you know, I have learned so much about atrial fibrillation. It's unbelievable, really. Like, I thought I knew some stuff, but now I know a lot more of that. You know, again, sometimes it can't be prevented, but for healthy individuals or individuals that really need to look at maybe changing some of their
yep.
habits, it's helpful, correct?
Absolutely. So first of all, look at your lifestyle. Try to eliminate things like smoking and excess alcohol. Holiday heart is very common. That's when someone has a big party over the weekend. We see this quite a bit, say, over Labor Day. They have some picnics. They have a few more drinks than normal. And then on Monday morning or Tuesday morning in this situation, people are coming in droves in AFib. So avoid excess of alcohol. Avoid stimulants. Try to cut back on caffeine. Get screened for sleep apnea if
mm-hmm.
you do snore. You know, watch your weight. Watch your diet. And pay attention to your body.
Right, right. And if you do need a cardiologist, we have one here. We have a couple here,
yeah,
right?
We have three cardiologists here. We have two excellent nurse practitioners that all work together as a team. We can identify your risk and help come up with a good course of therapy for long-term success.
Right, right. So, you know, if you ever have any questions, you can give us a call, right, at 570-253-8601. That is our physician specialty office, right?
Wonderful. Yep. Looking forward to hearing from you.
Great. And I want to thank you so much, Dr. Sowore, for being on the show today. The information you provided is so useful for our community.
Well, thank you so much.
Again, this is Carol Knier, Community Health Manager at Way Memorial Hospital. I want to thank you for listening and have a wonderful day.